Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Aloha. I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science girl, on this Tuesday, May 19th. And today we will be exploring the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary and the new draft management plan. The sanctuary was first designated by Congress in 1992 as a single-species sanctuary focused on, you guessed it, humpback whales. It spans the entire state and includes over 1,300 square miles of federal and state waters. The sanctuary is run by NOAA's Office of National Marine Sanctuaries, who periodically review regulations and management plans for the sanctuary. Today, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Malia Chow, the superintendent of the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary. She's been leading an effort to work with communities across the state to bring awareness to how a national marine sanctuary can provide place-based programs to support conservation and management. Malia, welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Carly, for giving us the opportunity to talk about the proposal we just shared with the public.
Yeah, I'm really excited to learn a little bit more about this. But before we go into the proposal, let's talk first about the sanctuary itself. So what are the basic goals or objectives of the marine sanctuary, and where exactly is it located? I mean, is it everywhere in the state or just certain places?
Yeah. Well, you gave such a great lead, and I'll just add that the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale Sanctuary is the most important calving mating grounds in the United States for humpback whales. And so for the most part, the boundaries here in Hawaii are found in the shallow water areas. About 600 feet or less is where they prefer to mate and spend their time.
Excellent. And so we have this really important area where the humpback whales are coming to mate and have their calves. And what really does the sanctuary do to help these whales when they come here from Alaska, I believe?
Well, as you can imagine, it's not much we can do specifically to manage the whales. It's really about helping people manage their behavior around whales. So we do a lot of ocean etiquette type of activities and reaching out to boaters to remind them about how to safely operate around whales.
Sounds like a good plan, and that makes a lot of sense that you can't manage the whales themselves. Now, I know you recently drafted this management plan. I know there was a management plan beforehand, but this is a new management plan that you have. What exactly is the change between the old and the new plan, and why is it important?
Yeah, well, what's different this time is that people need to know when the sanctuary was first established. Congress, in their wisdom, put forth a provision that said at some point in the future, you should consider adding additional resources. And so whenever we do these plans, these reviews, we look at new and emerging issues, and we try to evaluate how a National Marine Sanctuary here in Hawaii can best support some of the needs of the people. And so what's different this time is that we're proposing that we do more than just protect humpback whales.
That makes a lot of sense to me. You know, there's more than humpback whales in these waters. And are you focusing on the entire ecosystem, or is it, you know, just a few other species in the plan?
Yeah, we considered all the above, but through our process, we came to the conclusion that the appropriate way to do management in a place like Hawaii, and it's supported by scientific analysis, is that we're adopting a holistic approach to management, and we are adopting something that has to do with the entire ecosystem.
Well, that makes sense to me. Now, you talk about this process. I don't believe it's something that you came up with overnight. What were the steps that you took to get to this new management plan?
Yeah, well, we wanted to make sure that this reflected where the people of Hawaii, what their needs are. So we made sure that we led a very open and transparent process and talked to communities across the state. So our proposal that's out on the street, we hope reflects what people have told us through the last 3 or 4 years we've been working with them.
Well, that's great. It's so nice that everybody has an opportunity to provide input right from the beginning. And how long did this process take? I mean, is this something that took 1 or 2 months, or you've been working on this for years?
Yeah, we started back actually in 2008, but we officially began our public comment period in 2010. So we're looking at close to 5 years that we had this dialogue with stakeholders, communities about what would a National Marine Sanctuary mean here in Hawaii, and what would you like to see us do?
Excellent. And is there anything that stands out in your mind that was frequently discussed when people gave opinions towards the sanctuary plan?
Yeah, so I want to let folks know that we have a Sanctuary Advisory Council, and we use them to form different working groups to address priority issues. And several of the working groups converge on the same idea that whether you're talking about addressing water quality, whether you're looking at larger ecosystem protections and looking at other species, or you're taking a Native Hawaiian cultural approach, that you should go through, they converge on the idea that you need to go through an ecosystem approach to more effectively manage everything within your waters.
And I think that that makes a lot of sense, and we'll be actually talking to one of the Sanctuary Council members later on in the show. Now, were there other reasons from going for a single species to an ecosystem approach? When you talk about an ecosystem approach, does that include human behavior and human activities as well?
Yeah, so our definition of ecosystem includes the people who are part of the environment, and we're not just talking about natural resources, we're also talking about cultural resources. So in a place like Hawaii, where the host indigenous culture has such a strong Native Hawaiian focus, it's really important to us to understand what was culturally significant and what practices, whether they're traditional or customary, also needs to be preserved and protected so that people can continue their dependence and ability to continue to feed their families, for that matter, from the ocean.
That sounds like an important addition to the management plan. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask about, and on a more controversial note, is the humpback whales themselves. So we've recently heard that there is some proposals or people that are interested in looking at the humpback whales being delisted. We know that they're doing well. You know, it's obvious in the winter season when you can see the humpback whales. But how does this affect the management plan itself? And is this something that is being taken under consideration by NOAA?
Well, first, I think we all need to take a step back and really recognize that this is a huge success story. I think the humpback whale sanctuary probably can take credit for saving maybe 20 whales through our disentanglement program. But at the end of the day, the population has recovered. For us, I think it's important that people understand the humpback whales will continue to be protected within sanctuary waters under the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. We have the authority to protect special places in the ocean, which we call National Marine Sanctuaries. So regardless of what happens, whether they're delisted or not, the whales will still be protected, at least in maintaining their approach role within sanctuary waters.
Well, we can all agree that it is a special place for sure. And you mentioned the disentanglement program. I know that's not the focus of what we want to talk to today, but I think that's such an important and critical part of what you do. Can you share a little bit about what that entails?
Yeah, we have staff who are highly trained, and I don't recommend this for everyone, but actually who go out and respond to calls when they see an entangled whale. And they're trained to do a rescue and try to disentangle that animal. And it's not while they are saving the whales. I think it's really the purpose is to try to learn information from where the entanglement, the gear is coming from, and how to stop the entanglements from the future.
And when you say entanglements, is that mostly fishing gear or fishing pots?
There are some of that, yes.
Okay, excellent. And with this management plan that's now been advertised or shared with the public for comment, there's also a draft EIS. Can you explain what the EIS is and how they are similar or work in tandem together, or how these two documents are different?
Absolutely. So our draft management plan is a forward-looking plan that is not regulatory in nature. It's basically looking out at the strategies and activities we can do with communities. The environmental impact statement does an analysis of it and gives a range of alternatives, and this is really what we're asking the public to weigh in on. Of the alternatives, there's a number of different things that we can do, and we do a full analysis of each of them. So basically, status quo, remaining a humpback whale sanctuary. There are boundary changes being proposed. I think a total of 16% total addition is what we're proposing to include. And there's some sanctuary focus areas and management areas that we're proposing. So there are only four alternatives, and I really encourage the public to look at this because it reflects where communities have asked us to work with them across the state.
And I think that's actually something very important because you don't see that all the time where it's not just here's what we think, comment on it, but there's actually some choices here and different scenarios. Now, I don't know if you're allowed to say, do you have a favorite or preferred scenario, or is there one that you're leaning more towards?
Yeah, we show in the proposal there is a preferred management alternative. And within that, it's not only adopting an ecosystem approach. It talks about our boundary changes, and it highlights one area within state waters that we would partner with the state of Hawaii on how to best co-manage. So our preferred is alternative 3, and we hope that people take a good look at that and give us your comments on it.
Excellent. Now, I'm glad you brought up co-management as well, because the state plays a role in this sanctuary as well. Can you explain what is co-management and what are the different roles between the state and federal government?
Well, first of all, you mentioned that the sanctuary waters are both federal and state waters. And so we entered into a compact agreement with the governor's office to co-manage the sanctuary. This proposal is one that NOAA's releasing, and we've been working with the state to make sure that whatever we put out to the public is something that they could live with. But keep in mind that the state has to do their own review and analysis on it, and we'll weigh in at the end. So on the ground, what it looks like is that all decisions that we enter into are effectively discussed and done in tandem with the state of Hawaii. So we try to remind the state and the people of Hawaii that this is an opportunity to bring in additional resources to work to support some of the state goals in managing their nearshore waters.
Excellent. And so the state, when you do put out the draft sanctuary or a management plan, they will have an opportunity to comment similar to the public, and then that will sort of be all incorporated together and a final decision will be made.
There'll be no decision without the state weighing in. Absolutely.
Excellent. So I guess that's the next question is, once you collect all the public comments after the deadline, what happens next? What do you do with all of those comments?
Well, we're nearing our public hearings. You know, mm-hmm. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll be doing a total of 13 meetings around the state. Once we assemble all of that information, we will analyze it and sit down with the state. And so this is a long process. Step one is to make sure your voices are heard and you let both NOAA and, you know, indirectly the state of Hawaii know what you'd like to see the sanctuary do. That information is then incorporated and sent out to the public in any draft final plan that we put out. The comments will be responded to and shared with the public.
Wow, that is a huge undertaking. In previous reiterations or times when you've gone out for public comment, what kind of response do you get? That could be, take someone years to respond to.
Well, we feel if people take the time to actually respond, that we owe them a response, whether we can incorporate it or why we can't, or if that's even within our authority. So it's important to us during this public engagement piece that the public understands our decisions, and that's really why we respond to all the comments.
Oh, that's fantastic. And besides the public hearings, how else can the public provide comment or find the plan itself?
Yeah, so under our new administration within the White House, they created something called www.regs.gov, and that gives people a chance not only to post comments anytime at the convenience of your home, and doing it between now and June 19th, but you can also read what other people are submitting. And so really it's an opportunity to encourage more participation and make it easier. You can also send us an email. You can provide us with letters. You can send a fax. You can go to our website, hawaiihumpbackwhale.noaa.gov, and just there's a place where you can submit comments there too.
You know, it's really refreshing to hear this because, you know, previous management style was more a top-down approach, and this transparency and openness for public comment seems very refreshing. Is this a new form of management, or have you seen this happen with a lot of other sanctuary plans?
Well, that's a good question. So our National Marine Sanctuaries Act, you know, for better or for worse, requires a very extensive public engagement. So this is something that happens at sanctuaries across, because they want the sanctuary to reflect the needs of communities. And really, at the end of the day, if communities are not on board with this, then it doesn't make sense to move the sanctuary in that direction.
Excellent. And what are some of the common points made by the public? Have you already started to get some of the public input, or are you starting to see anything in particular that keeps coming up a lot?
Well, we've heard a lot of people already asking for additional areas to be included in our preferred alternative. They're already picking things that they like and giving specific comments. We're also hearing a concern about duplicating other agency efforts. So we're getting a whole range of comments right now. And so I'm really glad to see the level of participation we're getting.
And the plan itself also, you know, taking a look at it, addresses so many different areas. I mean, it's quite comprehensive. You've got research, education, cultural concerns. How do you plan incorporating all these different avenues once you have the final plan?
Well, the final plan, as I said, is a forward-looking document that emphasizes where we're going to be spending our time and money. And what's been so amazing, as we all know, in a place like Hawaii, every island has its different unique needs and programs that they would like to offer. So you can't help be a comprehensive plan because it reflects who the people of Hawaii and what they want our oceans to look like.
How's this experience been for you personally, Malia? I mean, you've been involved since the beginning. This has got to feel very rewarding to finally have this out.
Yeah, I have to say there's a certain level of accountability I feel now, standing up in front with communities across the state, with hearing their desires and dreams. And so it becomes very important to me to relay that message back to D.C. to make sure that they understand what it means to create a national marine sanctuary that's homegrown here in Hawaii, and to make sure that I carry that message forward. So there's a lot of personal accountability I feel in making sure this process goes smoothly and that people have a voice.
And when can we expect to see this final plan in its end state?
Yeah, I mean, we're probably looking at a year and a half from now. It really depends on what we hear back from the public.
Yeah, well, I imagine with a lot of public input, it will take some time to incorporate that and make final decisions.
Great.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking some time to talk to us about the management plan. I'm really looking forward to hearing what the public has to say and seeing what the final result is. Why don't you just remind us one more time? I want to make sure everyone who's listening can go make public comments and share their opinions. Where can they go again to see the plan and to provide comment?
Yeah, it's a really easy website to remember. It's www.regs.gov. And if you just put sanctuary in there, we're the first thing that pops up.
Easy enough. We're going to take a quick traffic break. And when we return, we'll be continuing to explore the humpback whale sanctuary.
My grades were bad. I would, like, get D's and C's.
I appeared to be doing good at my school life, but if you had seen me at home, it would have been a completely different story.
I mean, it was just rough focusing on school when your mother is somebody you have to take care of.
It got worse and worse and worse throughout the years.
There are students who need somebody.
They can trust someone, and it could be the first person they've ever trusted in their life.
Communities and Schools is lowering America's dropout rate by helping more than 1.3 million kids every year get whatever they need to succeed in school.
If something was going on at home, we would go just stop by Miss Liberty's office and talk to her.
Communities and Schools vouched for me when everyone else had lost hope.
You can help change the picture of education right here in your community and across the nation. Visit communitiesandschools.org.
I hear people say we can't save every kid, but I think that we can.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal, and today we are going to be talking about the recent release of the draft management plan for the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary. We now have a special guest calling in from Kauai. Maka'ala, do we have you on the line here?
You do. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm happy to do it.
Maka'ala is the conservation chair for the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary Community-Based Advisory Council, also known as the SAC, which we just discussed a little bit earlier. Now, Maka'ala was born in Kaneohe and is now an active advocate for nature and culture and is currently the executive director of the Hanalei Watershed Hui. Did I get all of that right?
You did, and I want to just make a brief comment and note that you're going to hear chickens in the background. I'm talking to you from Honolulu.
Well, welcome background sounds, that's for sure. So Maka'ala, first, before we dive into the whale sanctuary and the management plan, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Hanalei watershed and a bit more about your path and what you're doing over on Hanalei?
Happy to. So President Clinton designated the Hanalei River as one of 14 American Heritage Rivers in 1998. And in 1999, the community convened to figure out exactly what that meant and elected by a voting process a few people to run the show, and I was one of those people. The community then wrote a watershed action plan to address the things that they wanted to know more about and the things that they were concerned about. So the Watershed Hui implements that plan along with a watershed management plan which addresses specific pollutants in the rivers and the Bay of Hanalei. And we implement the Hanalei to Haena Disaster Resilience Plan, which looks at some environmental things as well, things like wastewater treatment and the like in the long term. We also coordinate the Hawaii State deal in our Makai Watch program for Hanalei. Our work ranges from conducting and coordinating research, providing educational programs, advocating, sometimes fiercely, for community-led planning, and convening conversations between agency folks and the community. There was a disconnect often between our communities and good people in science and government who really wanted to work together but didn't know how. And the American Heritage Rivers Initiative was designed to address that. It instructed federal agencies to work with communities at community request. So nobody comes into communities and tells you what you're going to do. You tell them what you want to do, and they figure out how to help you. It was a very novel idea, and all 14 American Heritage Rivers are still flourishing under that design today. It also included an economic piece, so it didn't ignore the fact that we have economic interests in community. What it did was sort of turn the triangle upside down and make the bottom the top and make community the lead in process. That's something that I believe strongly in, and so it was a good fit for me, and I've been doing it ever since 1999.
Well, it sounds like you certainly have a lot of experience with that, and I love the visualization of the inverted triangle. That is an excellent way to describe it. Now, it sounds like there are quite a few parallels here between your work with the Hanalei Watershed, Hui, and also with the Humpback Whale Sanctuary. So how did you get involved first with the Whale Sanctuary?
It's actually kind of an interesting story, and I can tell it over the phone better than I can in person because, to be honest, I get emotional when I tell it in person. In 2004, approximately 200 melon-headed whales sought refuge from sonar in Hanalei Bay. There was a RIMPAC exercise going on out in the ocean, and apparently they experienced that with pain, and they ran to Hanalei Bay, and they hid between the summertime yacht and the beach. They didn't actually beach, but they definitely were behaving intensely and were in trouble. The community responded, and in a very moving and appropriate way, using two traditional canoes, guided them safely back out to sea, and they have never returned. That day, I figured out that Hanalei was in the sanctuary, and I figured out what the sanctuary meant to the whales. Up until that time, I knew we were in the sanctuary, but I didn't know what it meant. And they showed me and many others that the sanctuary was supposed to be a safe place. So when the conversations more recently began about what the sanctuary could look like in the future, I wanted Hanalei to be part of that story, and I applied for a seat on the council.
Wow, that's a very moving story. Thank you for sharing such a personal account. And you obviously successfully received a seat. You're in the conservation seat now for the advisory council. What exactly does that mean? What is your role within the council? And tell me a little bit more about what the council does as a whole.
Well, actually, I was kind of thrown into the fire because I didn't know much about the advisory council, didn't know much about the sanctuary, except what the whales had told me. And I was assigned to the conservation seat. It's a good fit for me because it has a very broad scope. As chair of that committee, I work closely with all the other chairs of all the other committees and members of the sanctuary. I didn't have a whole lot of time to produce my own agenda or think of things that I wanted to do because immediately after I accepted the position, we began the draft management plan development process. And so as conservation chair, I've attended almost every committee meeting that was specifically looking at their sections of the management plan. We coordinate the conservation committee very closely with the research committee just to be sure that the overarching concerns and issues for sanctuary are being identified and addressed. So my role is a little bit of a larger scope than a very specific one, but it also encompasses many of the other facets. My own personal bent for advocacy for traditional things and places and for transparent process has certainly been the focus of my work in that chair.
And you mentioned that you work with a lot of other committees within the Sanctuary Advisory Council. How many are there? Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the other committees and what they do?
There's a lot, Carly. I have no idea. We can probably give you a full list, but it's extensive. It runs all the way from things like maritime heritage to an actual interest in the whales themselves and whale watching. It also extends to things like some of the other commercial uses. It extends to military interests and certainly includes the traditional Hawaiian concerns. There's a research committee. There's a wide span of committees because it is a dynamic sanctuary and has many components and aspects to it. I know that for the Maritime Heritage one, that was certainly an area I didn't know much about and have learned a great deal as we have learned the value of some of the sunken wrecks that are around, their treasured environments that are around them, but also how to protect them. We've talked about issues of needs of different users and protecting those who ply their trade, who conduct business in the sanctuary. So it's a wide range. Don't actually know the exact number because I treat them all like one big group. My perspective on it is that it is holistic and we all work together. So I'm not really the right person to divide them all into segments.
Well, I think you did a great job of sort of painting a picture of what the council looks like. And do you have in-person meetings or is it more just chatting over the phone or in small groups? How do you all work together?
All of the above.
Okay.
as often as possible, we do meet in person. It's important that we meet in person. All of the aspects of being a human mean that it's always more valuable if you're looking in each other's faces when you're discussing serious things. But it's an expensive event to convene us all, and so we try to do it at least annually, and some of the chairs and executive committee may meet a little bit more often than that. But throughout the development of this management plan, we have met in person many times. The sanctuary and NOAA has provided funding so that we can have those comprehensive conversations that need to happen in order to get the kind of detail that you see in the draft now.
And how long have you served on the council?
You know, that's another very good question. Time sort of is not my big thing, but it's probably been three years about. It was when we first started this whole thing. And actually, I wasn't aware of the pending draft management plan until Malia and other members of the sanctuary staff came to Kauai. And they came to the local community college to talk about it at its very beginning, before anyone had ever put any pen to paper. And I attended that gathering and was interested in the different opinions in the room, and there were many, really felt as though this was a process that would benefit Hanalei and that Hanalei could benefit.
And so, being involved from fairly early on in this draft management plan process, how do you think, or how do you anticipate that the community will feel towards this new management plan in Kauai? Do you think there are different issues on Kauai versus some of the other islands?
You know, I don't. I think that folks are going to be concerned about what ecosystem-based management means, because it's something new. And I think the evolutionary step from being a single species to an ecosystem-based management scheme is tough. You know, it's hard to get wrap your arms around it. What exactly does that mean? And so I think some of the interests that we've had here on Kauai will be very similar to other locations. There's an opportunity in this plan for communities to partner with NOAA in a way that they haven't been able to before. And so on the positive side, most people that do resource management and work in their own places on subjects like that are very excited about what that potential partnership might bring, expertise and tools, et cetera, to their process. And for those folks who are conducting commercial tours or who are commercial fishermen, people that are making their living in the sanctuary, they are by design concerned that nothing impede their ability to do that. And I completely understand that and get that. And we have that on Kauai, and I think we'll see that those concerns and opinions expressed statewide. That's a natural thing. It's really helpful if people actually read the plan, or at least the good executive summary of it, so that they know that it's not threatening with more regulations and more rules. But it is something new, and so it's something for us to pay attention to and to learn as much about as we can. I will say that for Kauai, there are many communities here who have long investment in taking care of their places. And they know one thing for sure, they can't do it alone. And so they're looking very forward to having another partner in the sanctuary.
Well, it sounds like there are a lot of positive opportunities for community involvement, and you certainly have your pulse on the community's interest over in Kauai. Working on the plan, Maka'ala, what's your personal thoughts towards it and some of the changes that are being proposed?
Well, it's for me, because of my experience with the American Heritage Rivers Initiative and partnering with 14 federal agencies, I am accustomed to that. I'm used to that. Hanalei has good experience with that, and so it doesn't frighten us or scare us or concern us to partner with the federal government. But for some communities, I understand that's a learning thing, and it just takes experience. It takes time. It takes building trust like anything else. I think that some of the proposals for boundary adjustments in the sanctuary, three of them are here on Kauai, they all came from community. Nobody at NOAA said, there's a puka, let's fill that. That's a gap, let's do something there. That is not how this process happened at all. The folks in Haena are trying to manage their marine resources in the traditional way of managing the entire Akupua'a, and the line, the boundary for the whale sanctuary did not align with the Akupua'a boundary. So they said, please make it align. That seems make sense to me, to them, and it certainly made sense to the sanctuary. And so that's one of the proposals for boundary adjustments in the sanctuary. For others who look at that, they're concerned that it's an expansion. But if they understand the genesis of the concept, who had the idea and who asked for it, they will understand that it's not Noah's idea. It was the people of Ha'ena's idea. The same thing is happening in Hanalei. The watershed Hui requested that the sanctuary include the Hanalei River estuary. It's one of the state's, if not the state's, largest estuaries. It's a non-channelized river. It's a large river. It's a navigable river. And it contains all five of the native O'opu species, and on any given day can have as many as 10 turtles and some big fish and lots of baby fish. And it seemed to us to be important to make that link with the bay, saying that the ecosystem does include the estuary. To me, that's kind of a no-brainer. That's kind of duh. But for others who see the idea of making the sanctuary bigger as a threat, once they realize what the point of it is, I think their concerns will be alleviated. So for some, the expansion, the word expansion or boundary adjustment has to do with people of the place wanting something to be included for a very good reason.
Well, that's very important background, and thank you for sharing that, Maka'ala. One last question before we take a traffic break here. Will you be involved with the implementation of the plan once there is a decision that is made?
Absolutely. Because, as I say, we suggested the inclusion of the estuary. I will certainly be involved in implementing. The sanctuary is a vital partner to the communities from Hanalei to Ha'ena, and the Hui and myself as an individual are very excited about the implementation of this plan. And I want to make a note that the estuary alternative is included in Alternative 4. I want folks to know that when they comment that they shouldn't limit their preferences or comments to one alternative. The preferred alternative is 3, but you can pick and choose from the others and move them around if you want to.
Well, that's an important point to make. So it's not a one fits all. You can definitely pick and choose. That's great to hear, Maka'ala. Thank you so much for taking some time today to share your experiences with us. I really appreciate you sharing your story so intimately. And I look forward to hearing more about what happens with the plan and with Kauai.
Thank you for the time, Carly. I really appreciate it. It's good to hear your voice again. I haven't talked to you in a while.
It's been a long time. Thanks again, Maka'ala.
Hang
tight. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk more management plan.
Peter Herrick was a 34-year-old carpenter when he joined the Navy Reserve. Peter's wife, Diana.
They were deployed to build schools and bases and to assist the Marines.
When the mortar round hit, I was completely knocked out. I didn't wake up until 6 days later.
Paralyzed veteran, Senior National Service Officer Raymond Bruce.
I saw Pete when he was at his worst. He didn't know if he was going to live to be able to see his daughter graduate from high school.
Raymond knew that I needed help figuring out where do we go from here.
We not only represent the veteran, but we represent the whole family.
11 months, we stayed in the hospital down in Tampa.
We advocate, we educate, and we process claims through the VA, and we follow that claim from the beginning to the end.
Without Paralyzed Veterans of America, I really honestly believe I'd still be in the hospital.
You can help our paralyzed veterans. To learn more, visit pva.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
So this is Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. Last but certainly not least, we have Fraser McGilvery, Executive Director from Malamo Mauna Lua. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Carly. Nice to be back.
Yes, it's nice to have you back. I think it was about 2 years ago that you were on All Things Marine, but serving as a different role.
That's right. At the time, I was the brand new administrator of the Division of Aquatic Resources when all the molasses spilled into the harbor, and that was a baptism by fire or baptism by sugar, depending on how you wish to look at it.
Well, certainly probably an unexpected start to that role. You're with us today in a different position. Tell us a little bit about Malamo Mauna Lua.
So Malamo Mauna Lua is a community-based organization, obviously based down in Mauna Lua Bay, down on East Oahu. East Oahu and Mauna Lua Bay runs from about Diamond Head and Black Point across to Portlock on Cocoa Head there. And we have about 60,000 community members that actually live on that bay. Malama Mauna Lua, our vision is basically for a healthy bay. And we know it's not healthy. And we need to work very hard and very focused to make sure that we try and improve the health of the bay, because that's really what we want and what the community down there has told us that they want as well.
That sounds like a worthy goal. And how are you trying to do that, or what are some of the ways that you're trying to improve the health of the bay?
Well, first and foremost, we're not trying to do this for ourselves. We've been told by the community down there, I mean, 98% of the Mauna Lua Bay community have express concern about the ecological health of the bay. I don't quite know what the other 2% were doing, or maybe they were just the ones that said we're not in that day and didn't answer the phone. But we do know that, you know, by far and away the vast majority of people are concerned about the health of that bay. For us, we mobilize volunteers massively. And on the day after Earth Day, we just got to talk about, you know, the number of people that get out and actually mobilize themselves to do good for the environment. And that, you know, not just here on Oahu, but also across the state. And we have about 3,000 volunteers a year come out and actively take part in our programs to improve the health of the bay, whether that's pulling invasive alien algae from the bay to try and, you know, allow the native limu to come back and restore the ecosystem, or whether it's cleaning up out streams to stop the sedimentation that runs down into the bay but through all these channelized streams that we have down in that part of the island. But we mobilize volunteers tremendously, and then we also work with a number of organizations, community organizations, nonprofits, the state, the federal government. Malia obviously is sitting here with us, and we work closely with NOAA on a number of things as well.
Well, it sounds like there's some common themes running through all of our interviews today and through these different organizations, where the community really is involved and caring about the place that they live in and trying to make a difference, and that the management is really looking towards the community. And I think this is a very refreshing thing to hear. It's very rewarding, and I'm pleased to hear about all these exciting programs and community input that's going on.
I mean, it really takes a village. It really does. I mean, it takes, we can't do it ourselves. NOAA can't do it themselves. The state can't do it themselves. So we really all have to work together collaboratively for ultimately what is a common goal. And the common goal is to improve the health of the oceans in Hawaii.
And Mauna Lua Bay, I mean, one of the goals is to improve the health of this bay. But is there something specific about this area? Why Mauna Lua Bay? Are there important biological or cultural significances attached to this bay?
People have been living on Mauna Lua Bay for generations. Traditionally and historically, they've been able to sustain themselves by taking from the bay only the right number, and it was managed very carefully and very well. There was a number of fish ponds on the bay. There are still some fish ponds on the bay that other community organizations are doing tremendous work to try and restore. But we have to remember that once upon a time, these islands were managed sustainably. all the food that was generated for the people who lived here came from here. There wasn't a ship to the mainland or a ship to anywhere else bringing food. And we have to hold that first, front and foremost in our brains and say, you know, how do we actually get back to an ecosystem that is healthy enough to be able to provide us with the nutrients and the nourishment that we need in a sustainable manner?
Sounds like an excellent goal to get there. Now, Mauna Loa Bay, how does that play into the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary new draft plan?
Well, Mauna Loa Bay has always been part of the Humpback Whale Sanctuary. It's always been there, and what's being proposed now are a special set of criteria and a special sanctuary management area. It's also the area where NOAA and the state government, as Malia mentioned earlier, have said that they're going to co-manage an area within state waters, and that's going to be Mauna Loa Bay. So it's a very important area, not just because it has so many residents who live there, but the federal government and the state government have agreed to come together and collaborate to co-manage this area. That to me is a tremendous step in the right direction. It really is. From Mauna Loa Bay, from Mauna Loa Bay and Malama Mauna Loa, we're obviously in support. We're delighted to see this collaboration. We're delighted to see this draft management plan. There is a lot in there that makes sense to us. As Malia mentioned, you know, alternative three is their preferred. Alternative three is our minimum preferred because we really want to see that that alternative. We wouldn't be against alternative four in any means because I know Maka'ala is probably still listening and is delighted to hear the, you know, that we're not against any other community groups and what and the respect that they want for their communities. We would support that too, the same way as many communities would support us in our efforts and our wishes too.
I just visualize number four and a number three with little running shoes on winning the race, trying to go forward. I want to go back to this criteria for special management areas, and maybe Malia can jump back on and talk a little bit more about this. But what is the criteria that goes into place to designate a special focal area within the management plan?
Yeah, I can certainly jump into that one. I think part of our consideration in thinking about where can we be the most effective is that other ingredient, which I think Fraser explained so well, is the community support on the ground. And when we look at Mauna Loa, we looked at the level of effort that community groups, particularly Malama Mauna Loa, has paid in trying to restore the bay. So for us in our transition to go from a humpback whale sanctuary to one that becomes more ecosystem-based approach to management, we wanted to demonstrate what that collaboration between community, state, and federal, and I should add county governance would look like. And I think we have the greatest chance of success there in Mauna Loa, given all the conservation efforts and multiple uses that are going on in Mauna Loa.
And Fraser, I imagine you're in a very well-poised position, being someone who came from the state into this position with the nonprofit. What type of experience do you bring from the state to Mauna Loa Bay now that you think will be useful in going forward with these new management plans and volunteer work?
Well, there was a number of things that, you know, obviously I learned at the state. I learned how state government works. I learned the processes that are required to actually make things a better place. And I also, you know, figured out who you have to work with. I mean, who are the key people that you really have to work with, not just within the Department of Land and Natural Resources, but across the entire state. And frankly, in the legislature as well, there's some key people in the legislature that are very keen to see this happen and are watching very closely the efforts of not just Malama Mauna Loa. I mean, I can't say that we're not doing this ourselves by any means. There are a number of community organizations down on the in and around the bay that are equally doing tremendous work. I mean, so just because I'm sitting here talking about Malama Mauna Loa and the bay, I do have to mention that there are considerable numbers of people out there who may not be connected to the organization that I'm connected to, but are doing tremendous work down there as well. We obviously know that we to support this plan and some of the outputs that are in there, one of which is a management plan for Mauna Loa Bay. We know that we have to work with every stakeholder group that there is going. I mean, whether that's the fly fishermen who like fishing just off Pico, whether it's the commercial boat operators that are operating the parasailing type thing, or whether it's the commercial fishermen. I mean, obviously, we have a huge number of paddlers down there. We have Huinalu sitting right on the edge of the bay. And good luck to anyone who's paddling. But I think we know we have to take into account absolutely everybody that's down there, and no opinion is more or less than anyone else's. So for us to, you know, try and help drive this plan forward, I think it's really important that we recognize all the stakeholders that are down there.
And I think that's a very good point. Does Malama Mauna Loa have a specific plan for the bay that is separate to the management plan, and how do those plans tie in together?
We obviously have a vision for the bay as an entity and as an organization. Our view for the bay is a healthy bay that is created through community kuleana. We know that we have to get back to a healthy bay. Right now, we have the lowest fish biomass in the state in that bay. The pressures are huge. The conflicts are huge between bay users. And in this draft management plan from the sanctuary, there is an output to do a community-driven marine plan for Mauna Loa Bay. We are massively in support of that, and we are very happy to facilitate that process. That doesn't mean it's our plan, but somebody just has to bring people together to actually start to put this plan together and get all those opinions and get the thoughts on what people want the bay to look like. What's everybody else's view for the bay? What do they want? We know 98%, as I mentioned earlier, are concerned about the ecological health of the bay. So let's use that as a starting point and build a community-based plan for this bay that we hope everyone can buy into as much as possible. And, you know, working with not just the community, but we also know we need the state, we need the federal government, we need the city and county involved, and we need as many stakeholder groups as we can possibly get represented through this process.
Well, with the lowest fish biomass in the state, that is on the island, is a very sobering statement. And so I think all the help you can get in working with all these organizations is very important. Now, is there specific things within the new proposed management plan that will address some of these threats?
I think there are. I mean, I think what we have to do again is, you know, the community's voice is very important. It really is. However, some of the things that we do know is we hear from various resource users out there and various bay users that there are, let's say, violations of state law going on, whether it's from one side or the other. We know that now, and some of the regulations that would come in under the various alternatives would help address those situations. So, for example, that we have heard that there's disturbance of the seafloor going on in very, very shallow areas, which we've also been told historically these areas were fish nurseries. So that can't be a good thing if you're disturbing your fish nursery all the time and there's no areas for the young of that particular species to grow and be protected. We're not going to have those fish populations back. So that's just one of many examples where we have to sit and say, okay, we have user conflict here. How do we get past that user conflict and come out with the other side with a plan where everybody's happy? Everybody agrees that this is how we're going to utilize and manage and respect the bay and move towards that vision.
Well, I hope Mauna Loa is able to find a plan that does make everybody happy and that works to try and improve some of this biomass, and that the sanctuary plan plays a big part in that. Now, a little birdie here in the studio told me there is potentially some news regarding the Sanctuary Advisory Council that we previously talked about and your involvement. Do you have any idea about that?
Maka'ala is going to be absolutely horrified because now she has to work with me even closer than she does already, and we're going to talk even more. But Malia just mentioned to me that I'm now the alternate seat on the for the conservation on the Sanctuary Advisory Council. So I'm delighted to hear that. I accept the challenge, and fingers crossed, I get appointed or selected or whatever the process happens to be. I now have an even more of a learning curve in front of me to learn something about that too.
Well, congratulations on that seat, and I'm very excited and very curious to hear how it all turns out. You all have to promise me once the management plan is finalized and goes back to the community that you come and talk to me and tell me how it goes.
I would love to. Thank you for the invitation.
Happily.
Thank you, Fraser, so much for taking some time to talk to us today. And to my other guests, Malia and Maka'ala, it's been enlightening to hear about the management plan, and I wish you the best of luck. Again, a reminder to our listeners that if you want to get involved, you have to, you know, share your opinion if you want to have stake in this. And so we really encourage you to do so. I'm Carly Weiner, and I'd like to thank our sponsors, Kosi Island Earth and Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. Now get out there and enjoy the ocean planet.